And now, welcome to the jungle. We start hour number two. I'm live in Southern California in the Quicken Loans studios. Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Nice to have you here. Second hour is a busy one. Coming up in about 5 seconds, an NHL Network analyst, Kevin Weeks. Stanley Cup Finals underway. Also, Tom Haberstroh joins me later on. This hour, we talk some basketball with him, but let's stay on hockey right now. In the meantime, if you're on hold, stay there. If not, hit me up. Telephone number is toll-free. We are joined right now by somebody who played 11 years in the NHL. He is an NHL Network analyst. He helped lead the Carolina Hurricanes to the 2002 Stanley Cup Final. He was a second-round draft pick back in 1993. Game 2, Washington at Vegas tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch our guest on NHL Network's NHL Tonight before and after every Stanley Cup Finals game from both Las Vegas and Washington, D.C., My guest is Kevin Weeks. Kevin, it's good to have you on the program. Good morning. How are you?
Romy, good morning. Thanks for having me on. Great. It's awesome, man. Literally just in transit to T-Mobile Arena as we speak. Out here in beautiful, sunny Nevada skies here in beautiful Las Vegas. So, yeah, what a game last night.
My man, it's great to have you back. All right, so as long as you're on the way to the arena, Kevin, let me start right there. Before we get into that game last night, and it was an incredible game, what do you make of the atmosphere in Vegas for game one?
Atmosphere in Vegas. Well, I hope we have a lot of time because I know how valuable your guests and your listeners are to you, but we need a lot of time to break this down. I'm going to tell you something. Nashville last year blew the roof off of the Stanley Cup Final. How to produce one, how to party at one, how to attend one, and everything else. And obviously the games were super compelling and highly entertaining. Nashville did it right last year, as right as it's been done. This year, though, game one, Vegas took it to an even higher level. And I apologize to all the great fans down in Smashville because they're amazing. I think Vegas took it to another level. I couldn't believe. Yesterday I was literally watching when we were on set on the NHL Network on our pregame show, and it looked like people were coming out of the cement. Like people were coming out of the sewer grates. It was like a thriller video. Not zombies, but I mean, the people just coming, just kept coming. In waves, the atmosphere was bonkers. DJ Joe Green, Mark Schunock, their live in-house and, of course, outside the arena, MC, everybody. It was off the chain. And Lil Jon, he was nice yesterday, too. He was on point. So, yeah, their fans, Romy, I'm telling you, you got to get out here for a game. Some way, somehow, you got to find a way to make it out here to game two.
Kevin Weeks, my guest. Kevin, listen, you take all the time you need because I think that's a really important point to make. And I've never seen anything like it. I thought Nashville was crazy last year. I have never seen anything like, and I'm not there, but I've never seen anything like what I saw for game one. Now, Barry Trotz was saying after the game that he thought that the atmosphere and the intensity of the crowd may have gotten to his guys, but he fully expects them to bounce back in game two. If you've never played in Vegas for a playoff game, let alone a Stanley Cup final game one, what is the experience like? And then how strong is that home ice advantage, and what kind of an impact does it have on the opposition?
Man, I'll tell you one thing. It was shaking outside. It was shaking outside, and it was shaking inside T-Mobile Arena. I felt like the rink was shaking. And I don't know if you've seen this rink yet, Romy. It looks like the Jetsons. It's unbelievable. I'd even give it the Staples Center 2.0, and we know how great the Staples Center is out there in L.A. But I'll tell you one thing. When the atmosphere is this raucous, it's this bonkers, this bananas, this crazy in a good way, your fans can't help but to be vibrating literally in the seats. They're jumping up and down. And same thing for the players. All the players that I talked to, speaking to head coach John Gallant, we spoke to James Neal the day before, Wild Bill Carlson, Marc-Andre Fleury, all the guys on this Vegas Golden Knights team say, we're playing at home, there's nothing like it. Like, we're on a different level. And they are on a different level. That's why they always come out and get that all-important first goal. And they certainly were able to do that last night in game one. On the other side of it, for the Caps, what makes it difficult, and I thought the Caps had a good game in certain areas of the game, of course offensively, but I think they were a little bit too loose for this current version of the Caps. Once the game became a track meet, I think that it favored the Vegas Golden Knights. For Coach Trotz and the Caps, the key thing for them is the first half of the first period, yes, they were able to kind of hang in there. Although they got outshot, they were down one. And then they were able to turn the game around. Four different lead changes yesterday, but I don't think the Caps managed the game as well as they needed to, Romy. And another thing, this year's version, for any of you Caps fans out there in D.C. in the Beltway, you can attest to this. This year's version, the Washington Capitals, are a more complete 200-foot game on both sides of the puck. And I think they got away from that last night on the defensive zone responsibilities.
Kevin Weeks joining us on the program. Kevin, go back to this notion of it turning into a track meet, because Vegas is fast, they're physical, they're relentless. From a goalie's perspective and an overall defense perspective, how do you go about slowing them down and taking them off their game?
The Capitals need to do what they did to Tampa, because we know how dynamic Tampa is as well, but they had a pop gun offense in game 6 and 7 against the Caps, because the Caps did a great job in the neutral zone. They played that right wing lock. They forced Tampa into playing a game they didn't want to play. And they're going to need to do that if they want to have a chance, which I believe they do have a chance, to beat the Vegas Golden Knights. I think this series can go 6. I've got the Knights to win it in 6, but if the Caps, they're the ones playing, if the Caps want to have success here in the Stanley Cup final, their attention to detail defensively, but the level that we saw from them against the Tampa Bay Lightning in games 6 and 7, that's the way they need to play. Clamp down in the neutral zone, force the Golden Knights to have to chip pucks in, not a lot of plays off the rush, force them to have to play that cycle game, almost like a football analogy, force them to run the ball. Essentially, that's what a lot of the guys and the coaches say. And if they can do that, they give themselves a better chance. But if they get sloppy and they become a little bit of the old Washington Capitals, that's not the recipe for success that's brought them to this point, and it certainly won't be the recipe for success for them to bring that all-important first cup back to D.C. in the Beltway.
NHL Network studio analyst Kevin Weeks joining us. Hey, Kevin, speaking of physicality, number of Vegas Golden Knight players obviously had a problem with Tom Wilson's hit on Jonathan Marchessault and would like to see more discipline for it. He said afterwards, Wilson said, he'd probably say he shouldn't admire his pass. I'm just finishing my check. Quote, end of quote. Where do you come out on that play?
Mike Rupp, who's on with us, my former teammate with the Devils, Rupper was saying yesterday on our post game that typically NHL player safety allows 0.8 seconds after a play, after a puck is played, to deliver a hit. That timed out at about 0.75. It was really close where that's concerned. One of the good things for Tom Wilson that is on the hit is he delivered the hit through the body. It was shoulder, was the principal point of contact, and it was from shoulder down through the body, not shoulder up to pick his head. So that, I think from that standpoint, it made it legal. Marchessault, after the hit, also said to him, good hit, which is a great indicator of the fact that he didn't think that it was an egregious play or a malicious play. Marchessault, based on the Leafs concussion protocol, spotters, he had to go to the locker room. He was able to come back and finish the game, fortunately for him and for the Golden Knights. He's an elite right winger, of course, and a part of that big-time first line that they have. I think at the end of the day, I didn't love the hit selection per se, but Marchessault did admire his pass. He did put himself in a vulnerable position. And if Tom Wilson really wanted to injure Marchessault, based on his size and strength and the discrepancy of that from player to player, Wilson could have done that. So it wasn't the best hit. A penalty was assessed on the play. There were offsetting minors on that play. Perhaps he could have gotten a major for it. But aside from that, I'm not sure that that's going to warrant any supplementary discipline.
Kevin Weeks doing what he does. All right, what about the other side? The Capitals, for their part, were irritated that Ryan Reeves was out on the ice to score that game-tying goal because they felt that he should have been called for cross-checking on John Carlson. Do they have a point?
They have a point. Perhaps it was a miss. It was a missed call. But as you saw game one, really, there's only 4 penalty minutes aside. It was a relatively clean game, and the officials in Wes McCauley and Mark Jeanette, they allowed guys to play. You know, they don't want to be the stars. They're here by their own merits, without question, and it is a meritocracy in terms of who Stephen Walken, who's our director of officiating for the league, who he selects as the officials for the Stanley Cup. It's their Stanley Cup, too, but they want to be out of the way. So they're trying to allow the players to do their thing. Let some of the best athletes in the world, that are hockey players, let them play, let them dictate the outcome of the Stanley Cup. They want to be seen, but they don't want to be heard, really. And they just want to do a great job in terms of officiating. So, yeah, I think that perhaps there could have been a call there, but I'm with Ryan Reeves. After the game, I know John Carlson and some of the Caps had some things to say about it. I'm with Ryan Reeves. Hey, if penalty wasn't called, we play on. I mean, it's no different. You know that from hoops. It's the same thing. No foul call, you play on. You're not going to stop and wait for a foul to be called. And it's no different in the Stanley Cup playoffs, especially with our sport being as physically demanding as it is, let alone here in the Stanley Cup finals. So, Ryan Reeves had another big game. He scored in consecutive games. And, hey, I'll tell you one thing. That fourth line, Romy, they were a collective +8 rating last night.
That was huge.
+8.
I know it.
Rating. which is massive, as you just said.
That was huge. Kevin Weeks joining us. Absolutely huge. Hey, Kevin, before you go, let me ask you this. Weigh in on this notion of that pregame show, you know, prior to what happens before they drop the puck. I mean, it's Vegas. It's a town where they give you a show, but you have a lot of hockey purists saying, come on, man, there's no place for this. This is the NHL. We're about tradition. We're about doing it professionally. Where do you come out on that aspect? Do you have any issue with what they do prior to the start of the game there?
I do, and I really do, and I don't like that. And I'm going to tell you this right now. One thing that I know about Italy is they've got some of the best food in the world, some of the best art and culture. And anytime I'm in Rome or Amalfi Coast or wherever I am in Italy, I can have the same experience in terms of having a sample of that food and culture in New York when I'm at home, in Jersey when I'm at home, on the road here in Vegas, in Chicago. Point being is they never say, oh, pasta, it's Italy's food. It's our food. Only we can drink our limoncello. Only our limoncello can be done this way. Only our pesto sauce. No. They celebrate the fact that other people celebrate their greatness. And that's something that we need to continue to shift towards. I know Commissioner Bettman, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, I know somebody like Lou Robitaille with the LA Kings Hockey Hall of Famer, their president of hockey and business ops. They understand the fact that we need to continue to grow and evolve our game. Great Wayne Gretzky, a lot of our forefathers that played in this league, Merrill Lemieux, Luke Robitaille, Bobby Orr, I can go down the list of all the great players from generations past, Mark Messier, who I played, but these guys all did everything to help build our game. So too did a lot of women in different front offices, men and women in different front offices around the league. This isn't about compromising tradition, air quotes. It's not about being disrespectful to the game. I hate that because as somebody whose parents were born in Barbados and left the beautiful island to emigrate to Canada and me aspiring to be an NHL player, in many ways, I feel like I'm a quote-unquote non-traditional where that's concerned by way of birth, by way of origin, by way of heritage. And I live in the United States. This is home now. I'm an American resident. I love being here. So I really think a big part of our sport, Romy, is having as many people consume our sport as possible, having as many different girls and boys play our sport, men and women, adult rec leagues play our sport. And I think that that's really the sign of true greatness. And if we continue to grow our sport the way we have and the way we want to as we go forward, you know this as well as I do. There are LeBron James jerseys, there are Jordan jerseys, literally in Africa. There's Cristiano Ronaldo jerseys in Haiti. I mean, that's what we're talking about, is continue to globalize our sport and have as many different people enjoy it. So when those naysayers start talking, that comes from a sense of entitlement. I think it comes from a sense of arrogance. And as you know, Romy, nothing in sport, nothing in life is going to evolve and will continue to grow and improve if you have a sense of entitlement. You got to go out and work for it every day. You got to grind every day. And Bill Foley and the Maloof brothers, what they've done, the fans here in Vegas, everything that they've done here, they've done 10X in terms of quality, to quote Grant Cardone, quality, value, excellence, greatness. They put that all in a huge package, and there's no entitlement to success. This team hasn't come through the side door to success. They busted through the front door to it.
Kevin, that is the first Grant Cardone reference in the history of the jungle. Well played. Well played.
That's my guy.
Well played. You can watch Kevin on NHL Network's NHL Tonight before and after every Stanley Cup Finals game from both Las Vegas and Washington, D.C. How do you argue with their success? They're three games away from winning the Stanley Cup Final as an expansion team. I agree with you. Kevin, great job. Really nice to have you back, man. Have a great series, and always good to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Romy. Appreciate you having me on again, man. Keep up the great work. And thanks to all you great NHL fans around the world that tune in to watch us and that listen to Romy. Thank you so much.
Nice job, Kevin. Appreciate you very much. Kevin Weeks, NHL Network analyst, 11 NHL seasons. And what he's saying is, look, if it helps grow the game, that can't be anything other than great. Evolve. Grow. Keep the game moving. I've got a take on that myself. I've got no issue with that at all. I mean, I know the hockey purists and the traditionalists don't like that. They're talking about how, what is this, man? Like some medieval dinner? Look at that garbage. Look at that trash. There's no place for it. Garbage. Yeah, that or it's awesome. Get a life. I mean, are you going to be that serious about that? Come on. Come on, original Sixer. They're three wins away from winning the Stanley Cup Final. Have you ever been to Vegas? Have you ever been on the Strip? It's always about the show. They're in this unbelievable competitive environment where they've got to get you off the Strip into their house, and it's working. Hell, into their house. You can't get into their house. They jam that house for practices. talking about practice. I love them. I love everything about them. I love the way they put that team together. And he's right. They are 10X.
Practice.
They are 10X. In other words, they do everything they're supposed to do, and then they do it 10 times more than you would expect. And now they're 3 wins away. But the Caps aren't dead. I would expect a long series. Another reason why I like that pregame, they said it themselves. It knocked them off their spot. They were jittery. They were all keyed up. I mean, how is that not going to intimidate you? The way that place shakes, you see a show like that before you take the ice, especially if you've not been there before? I've got no issue with it at all. In fact, I love it. I love it. 1-800-636-8686. I know we've got a lot of hockey fans listening right now. What do you make of game one? What do you make of what you just heard? Where do you come out on all of this? You have your phone number. Hit us up. Tom Haberstroh coming up later on. Also, one thing, Podcast Tuesday. Got a great EP39. Inky Johnson is one of the most compelling figures I've ever spoken to. I can't wait to have a conversation with him. We haven't had it yet. I'm going to have it right after the show today. If you know Inky and you know his story, you know you don't want to miss that. If for some reason you don't know him or his story or his rap, he is one of the most inspirational speakers you're ever going to hear. Inky Johnson joining us on Podcast Tuesday, EP39. That drops right after the program. Let's talk about Zipa. Zipa is spelled Z-Y-P-P-A-H. Happy Z spelled backwards. If you go to bed with Zipa, you're going to wake up with happy Z's. As an example, did you know that one night of bad sleep can ruin your entire day? Are you traveling for the holidays? Are you planning a summer vacation? You don't want to ruin the entire vacation with snoring all night. Vacations are supposed to be a time for rest and relaxation. How do you expect to get any rest if they're snoring all night long? I mean, did that go down over the long holiday weekend? Did somebody keep you up? Did you keep yourself up? You need a Zipa. Snoring is not sleeping. If you or somebody you know snores, just go to Zipa.com because Zipa is guaranteed to stop snoring. You've got nothing to lose. If you're not happy for any reason, return it for a full refund. Snoring is still rude. It is still disrespectful. It's still offensive. You do not want to ruin another holiday weekend or your summer vacay with snoring. Get your Zipa today by going to Zipa.com. Use the promo code ROAM and get free shipping and ensure that you have a great summer. Zipa.com. That's Z-Y-P-P-A-H.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Look, it's a good day for telephone calls. Coming off a great weekend, right? And I was off on Friday. I was off on Monday. Let's get caught up. Get in here. Hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. I mean, I'm back from the basement. Had a nice run. All fired up. And hanging over my head at the office are now 3 different countdown clocks, all of which are very important and all of which are spinning quickly. And if you've got a pen or you've got your phone handy and you want to put it in the notes app, go ahead and do it. Take some notes. Follow along closely right now because this summer in the jungle is about to get very nice. We're now 52 days. 52 days. Think about that now. 52 days away from the smack off. 52 days left for anybody out there looking to rip a golden ticket and get qualified. And keep in mind, I'm not going to be here for some of those 52 days. So if you want in on Smackoff 24 and you're shot at $5,000, time is running out. And if I'm not working on that day, you can't get a golden ticket. Hawk cannot give away a golden ticket. As much as I love my guest hosts, they don't have the authority to give away a golden ticket. Alvin can. Alvin, you can. If when I'm in the basement, dude, what? Dude, I can? Cool. Imagine me coming back and Alvin's giving away like 30 of them. Alvin, you can. You can, Alvin. You are the most tenured member of the XR4TI. I trust you. Look at him. He's giddy.
Dude.
Your time is running out. Stop sitting on your hands. Pick up the horn. Get in here right now. I've got a stack of tickets that I'm looking to give away to the right people. Maybe you think you're one of those people. There is only one way to find out. Get at it, because you don't have nearly as much time as you think you do. That's countdown clock number one. The second countdown clock is much tighter, because the second one has only 6 days left. 6 days until the voting opens up for the National Radio Hall of Fame. 6 days. 6 days. And so I need every last one of you to bang the ballot box and get us into the Hall of Fame together. If you've heard me talk about it and have been wondering where and how to vote, those instructions are coming very soon, like 6 days soon. So be ready, because my biggest ask of you is coming up first thing next week. And don't worry, I will have you totally keyed in on where you go to vote and what you have to do. Just make sure that you're here to hear it, or you're following me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Third and final countdown clock is the most urgent. It pertains to the Hall of Fame vote. I know a number of you are going to vote and are just waiting for the polls to open up. However, another chunk of you say that you're willing to vote, but you want to know what's in it for you. You know, I see it working. Sort of. Not really. But I'm willing to play along, because we need every vote that we can get. So to those of you looking for a payoff, I've got you. I'm officially at the negotiating table with a fountain pen, a blank piece of paper, and a box. A box that we're calling the Box of Chaos. Here's how it works. From now until Friday, this Friday, you can write down a list of your demands that you want me to meet in exchange for your Radio Hall of Fame vote for next week. I'm serious now. If there's something you want me to do on this show, tweet it to me or email it to rome@haveatake.com. Any reasonable demand ends up in the Box of Chaos. And on Monday, when the voting opens up, I will randomly draw out five of them live on the air. And I will pay off all five of them if we get into the Hall of Fame. The countdown clock is at 4 days. Today, tomorrow, Thursday, Friday. These are your last 4 days to get a demand into the Box of Chaos. You can do better than you've already done. There's got to be something else you want. Start thinking of what you want in return for your vote, because this time I will play along. Here's some ideas that have come in already. My wife, Janet, co-hosts a segment with me. She told me over the weekend she's not doing it. I said, yes, you are. Yes, you are. If I pull that out of the box, you're doing it. Keep in mind, she has appeared on this show once in a quarter of a century. Also, I have to wear Hawk-style shirts buttoned up to the top for one whole week. If I pull that out of the box and you get me in, I will do it. The piece of crap list comes back. Yeah, I guess I'll do that. James Kelly reads mean tweets about his five head. Well, we're definitely doing that. I finally appear on the Woodscopes. I'll do that. Lil Alvey hosts a segment. He will do that.
No.
And the most requested demand, I bring back the hack off. I will do that. These are all things that are on the table. All things that I will draw from the Box of Chaos on Monday. All things that I will make good on if we get into the Hall of Fame. Get your demands in. You have only until the end of the show Friday. Lots of things to get done and get done quickly. But this is why I'm here, to get stuff done. How about you? I'm here to get things done. What about you? What are you doing for us? Come on now, clones. How awesome would that be? If you get me in, you can take credit for it. Because, by the way, it's a listener vote. If I get in, it is because of you. You should take credit for it. In fact, we should get a cup made up if it ever were to happen, and everybody can have it for one day. Do whatever you want. Abuse the cup in any way you want. But wouldn't it be awesome if we got in and we could put all your names on the cup? Well, let's not get crazy. I just want your vote. I just want your vote. I've got Tom Haberstroh coming up next, so let me get out for that right now. Zach Goldich, LA Chargers offensive lineman, in hour number three. It's good to be back after a couple of days off. Now you do your job. Pick up the phone, lob us a call, get in the rotation, get on the air, get racked, get a golden ticket, make yourself eligible for $5,000 and the best thing in sports talk radio. It all starts with a phone call. You find Hawk, you get through him, you get to me, you get on the air, you close. get it. Time now for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Jim Rome with you on this Tuesday. A quick reminder, snoring is disrespectful. It's still offensive. You have to stop. Get a Zipa right now. Make everybody happy. Zipa, 100% guaranteed to work. Check it out at ZYPPAH.com. That's Happy Z spelled backwards. As promised, we're joined right now by an NBA analyst for Bleacher Report, Count the Dings podcast host, the creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge, Tom Haberstroh, is my guest. Tom, it's great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jim?
Tom, I'm doing great. Can't wait to talk to you about what we saw over the weekend. So let me just jump right into it, Tom. I know you're busy. But going into Game 7, there was definitely a concern from a Houston perspective about them running out of gas in the second half. So knowing that, Tom, what did you make of how that game started last night? And in particular, how Golden State came out in the first quarter, sloppy on offense and getting killed on all the effort plays.
Man, my cell phone was lit up, Jim, from all my friends and colleagues in the industry, my family, saying, wow, the Warriors are done. The Houston Rockets are cooking. Can't believe it. KD's going to leave, and the sky is falling. But I just kept telling everybody, like, just wait. We just saw this happen in Game 6. And if we know anything about James Harden, it's that he tends to wear down. In the last two postseasons, he's shooting 25% from three after game one and 38% from the floor. In this series alone, James Harden shot 16% from downtown after the first quarter and had more at 29 assists and 28 turnovers, which is really, really, really tough for a guy who handles the ball as often as he does to have a one-to-one, basically, assist-to-turnover ratio. So, Jim, it played out exactly as I suspected. The Rockets really struggled to play defense and hit shots in the second half, and it played out in Game 7. So I'm not surprised at all about what happened in Game 7 because it happened in Game 6 too. It's just the Warriors, when their backs are against the wall, they play great. But I think in the first quarter and in Game 1, I think they just get a little complacent because they know it's not a do-or-die situation, and the Houston Rockets just don't have enough legs to do it for all 48 minutes. And I think it starts with James Harden. He's going to win the MVP this year, but I think he has to take a real gut check this summer and say, do I want to be great for 82 or do I want to be great for all 100? Because I think that's the next step for him in his career.
Tom Haberstroh joining us. Really interesting thoughts. You go back to the Warriors for a minute. I mean, you started this thought, Tom, but how do you explain them showing up like that in the first half of both Game 6 and 7? Are they just bored or is it something else?
No, I think it is a lot of complacency. I think it is boredom. I think it is knowing that they got four all-stars on their team. Forget Andre Iguodala. With Kevon Looney in that starting lineup with the Hamptons four, I'll call it, they were plus 31 in this series. And even without Andre Iguodala, they were still really good with those four all-stars in the lineup. And I think for them, they just know, hey, we're going to be fine. As long as we get things together after halftime, we can blow them out. And blow them out they did. I mean, the Rockets missed 27 three-pointers in a row. And yes, you can point to that being just a huge anomaly. But I think the Warriors just have a lot more weapons than the Rockets. And so I think that complacency is understandable. Given that they were going against a Rockets team that had no Chris Paul, I think you're going into that being like, we'll just walk all over them. And that's kind of what happened. In the second half, they dictated the pace. Steph Curry with the ball in his hands went just supernova. And I think for them, the Warriors, you have to worry about that game one against Cleveland. Because, Jim, this game one, I think right now the Warriors are favored by 12 points. It's the biggest spread for any playoff game or any finals game since the 2001 finals, game one, Lakers, Philadelphia 76ers. The Lakers were favored by, I think, 11 or 11.5 in that game one. And what happened? The 76ers won. So I think that's going to be really interesting to me is whether at the Oracle the Warriors show up for game one or they look at the LeBron James You know, Kevin Love not looking good for game one. You have to wonder if that complacency is going to nip them in the bud for game one and whether they show up. I think actually this is going to go five games, and I think the Warriors are going to lose game one because of the complacency and the boredom that you're talking about.
Tom Haberstroh joining us. I think it's a really interesting point. I mean, if they're looking at a team that won 65 games and it's game seven on the road and they come out and they're bored, you can imagine what they must think looking at a Cleveland team that has LeBron and not much else right now. You know, from a Houston standpoint, Tom, before we leave that point, what do you think is going to sting the most about the way that series ended? Is it going to be the Chris Paul injury or the fact that they had double-digit leads in both games or that they went 0-27, or is it something else?
Yeah, Daryl Morey after the game said he felt like they should have won that game seven, and it's hard. And they, I mean, it's hard to believe otherwise when you look at how many missed three pointers they had in a row, and the fact that they had the game at home, they had a 15-point lead at one point in that game. So you really got to feel like they blew it. They blew that opportunity. But you know what? I feel like if you take a 30,000-foot look at this series and this season for the Houston Rockets, I think if you had told me before the year that James Harden was going to be like just about a unanimous MVP, I think it's going to be close. I don't think he's going to be a unanimous MVP, but the runaway favorite for the MVP and that they're going to push the Golden State Warriors to seven games, I think they take that. So it's going to be a sting. I think it's going to hurt. Now, obviously, the 27 missed threes is going to really, really stink. But I think ultimately, as time wears on, I think they'll look back at this season as a huge success because you have to keep those expectations where they were in the preseason. This is a huge, huge success for the Rockets. I just hope that James Harden figures out how he can solve the post-game one issues that he's had over the last 2 years. He has 40-point games, just about a 40-point points per game average in game ones, and then completely wears down after that. He has to solve that issue if they want to take another step forward next year.
So how do you think he goes about doing that? What should he do?
I think a lot of it comes down to managing your minutes, managing your exertion levels in the regular season. You have to leave enough in the tank. And you know what? I don't blame James Harden for not managing his effort levels or managing his energy in the regular season, because ultimately he hadn't won the MVP yet. He wanted to prove that he can win an MVP. You know, he won the Sixth Man of the Year award coming off the bench for OKC. He's been in the MVP conversation. And I think this was just one thing on his resume he really wanted. And I'm not going to blame him for that. But I think ultimately you have to trust your teammates more. You have to trust Chris Paul more. And you don't have to do it all by yourself for the first 82 games of the season. So once he checks that box off, the MVP box, I think he's going to want to look at something more and just try to get in better shape, better conditioning, and delegate a lot more to Eric Gordon and Chris Paul types so he doesn't feel like he has to do it all by himself for the 82 games. You know, LeBron James could win MVPs every year in the regular season, but ultimately I think he preserves his body for that 100-game slog that he knows it's going to require to silence the doubters. And I think James Harden's at that point in his career where it's going to be more than just the regular season.
Tom Haberstroh joining us right now. In fact, you mentioned LeBron, so let me ask you this, Tom. You've had a day and a half to think about this and reflect on what you saw from him in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. What kind of thoughts and reflections do you have on that performance?
Legendary. And the fact that he could have lost that game and probably had a better legacy for a lot of people in this country or a lot of people worldwide, you know, that 3-5 record in the finals, he could have just lost game seven and said, you know what, I don't want to sully that. Like, it's not worth it for me to add another loss in the finals column because that was what was at stake. You know, he came out and played incredibly down the stretch, and the Celtics looked like they were worn down, that they were the young team, and they were. But LeBron James, it is incredible what he's done. I tweeted this two nights ago. He played all 48 minutes in his 100th game of the season. He has been to 8 straight NBA finals and has never missed a playoff game in his entire career. Jim, 235 games he's been asked to play in the playoffs, and he's played all 235. It is astounding the kind of metronome of greatness that LeBron James is these days. It is an incredible achievement, not just to get to the finals, but to do it while averaging 34 points a game when everybody is trying to stop you. It's incredible. There are not many words you can say about LeBron James. Those numbers put it pretty succinctly that he had just an amazing run with the against the Golden. I mean, the Boston Celtics. 100 games this season, and he played all 48 minutes. Didn't rest once in that 100th game.
Yeah, I mean, there's the level, Tom, that he's put in that time and played all those minutes, but his availability is just amazing. Like, when you look around the playoffs and around the league, and you see key guys like Chris Paul, Andre Iguodala, earlier Steph Curry getting injured, how much more impressive is it that LeBron is doing what he's doing, given the minutes that he's playing year in and year out?
He raised the bar. He played all 82 games and finished the season as a minutes-per-game leader. It's not just that he played every game. It's that he played the most minutes of any player in the league. So, I mean, he checked off both of those boxes. And you look at the rest of the stars. I mean, Kawhi Leonard barely played this year at all. Kevin Durant last year had an MCL strain. Same deal with Steph Curry, MCL injury. Andre Iguodala, Chris Paul, Kyrie Irving. Just about every star here in the playoffs got hurt. And LeBron James still stands tall. It's an incredible achievement. I mean, you look at everybody else in the MVP conversation, and they're nowhere near as durable, as reliable as LeBron James. And a lot of people point to that as, hey, he's just a genetic marvel. But it's more than that. You saw what he looked like after the game with about 600 pounds of ice packs on his body. I mean, he prepares every single game just about making sure that every inch, every edge that he has to stay healthy, he's going to take that. So it's a testament to not just how much he prepares, but also, yes, he's a physical marvel.
All right, so Tom, one last thought about the matchup itself. As you've pointed out, Golden State's offense was completely different in the finals of the conference as they ended up running more ISOs than normal. So what was Houston doing, and is there any way Cleveland can replicate that as well?
They were switching, Jim. The Houston Rockets defense was switching with a lot of guys, you know, smaller guys, P.J. Tucker, Chris Paul, switching on to Kevin Durant. And rather than moving the ball, they decided, hey, we're just going to take advantage of this mismatch and go one-on-one. And I think a lot of that was smart because, you know, you want to exploit those mismatches. But to an extent, you do not want to get away from what got you there. And for the Golden State Warriors, the pass-heavy offense, everyone touches the ball. That's the reason why they're a great team. And I think for a lot of stretches, they lost themselves a little bit trying to go one-on-one rather than moving the ball and getting open shots. And that's the Steph Curry way. That's how Klay Thompson is as good as he is ball movement. And I think in this finals, I don't know if the Cavaliers have the athletes to do that and the frame of mind to switch on everything. It'll be interesting to see if they're going to go with a switch-heavy defense and try to lull the Warriors into that one-on-one basketball, because that's going to be very demanding, not just physically, but mentally. You have to prepare that all season, and I don't know if the Cavs can really flip that switch.
He is an NBA analyst for Bleacher Report. He is the Count the Dings podcast host and, of course, the creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge, Tom Haberstroh, my guest. Tom, great job. Really nice to have you back, Tom. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it as always.
You got it, Jim. Anytime.
Good job, Tom. Well done. All right, so he likes Golden State in five, but he thinks that they're going to lose the opener. It wouldn't surprise me. Judging the way or how they've started games of late, it would not surprise me. It's one thing to be bored in the middle of the season. It's another to be bored in Game 7 on the road against a team that won 65 games. But they are because they're that good. They are because they can. And when everybody saw them fall behind by 15. Now, look, I'm not going to say, I tweeted last night, fairly early in that game, that Houston was looking to end it early, and they might. I mean, I've never seen Golden State look like that. Well, aside from Game 6, but especially in Game 7. I've never seen them look that out of sync, out of rhythm, discombobulated. I mean, they were not getting any of the hustle plays. They were not getting to any of the 50-50 balls. They were not taking care of the ball. They were getting murdered on the offensive glass. I mean, nothing was going their way, and everything was going Houston's way, and they were getting more and more confident with more and more swag, and that house was just off the hook. But that's Golden State, right? They've been there before. They've got that composure. And the composure comes with the knowledge. And why are they so composed? Because they have been there before, because they are the champs, and they know they've got four stars. And they've got the depth. And they know they can get it done. And they did. and they know they can throw the switch. You keep thinking to yourself, yeah, but what if they go to find the switch sometime and they don't find it? Yeah, but they pretty much do every single time. I think Golden State in five sounds about right. They are heavy, heavy favorites going in. And I also agree with what he just said. I don't think the Cleveland's got the athletes to play that kind of switching defense that the Rockets did that made things difficult for Golden State. Coming up on hour number three, still ahead, LA Chargers offensive lineman Zach Goldich, open phones next segment, and a lot more. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Don't go anywhere. One strong hour ahead.